Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
Atheism helps us stand for so much more and fall for so much less.
We'll talk about that, and then we'll interview Mohammed Sayed,
founder and president of Ex-Muslims of North America.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. The UN Secretary General warned on Thursday that we are running out of time to limit global temperature rises, a matter of life or death for climate-vulnerable countries on the front line of the crisis. Speaking to the first climate-vulnerable finance summit of 48 nations systemically exposed to climate-related disasters, Antonio Guterres said they need a reassurance that financial and technical support will be forthcoming.
To rebuild trust, developed countries must clarify now how they will effectively deliver $100 billion in climate finance annually to the developing world, as was promised over a decade ago.
The UN chief said that to get the world back on its feet, restore cooperation between governments, and recover from the pandemic in a climate-resilient way, the most vulnerable countries had to be properly supported. UNICEF on Thursday signed its first ever COVID-19 vaccine agreement to supply the 55 members of the African Union with up to 220 million doses of the J&J single-dose vaccine by the end of 2022. Deliveries are expected to begin in the next few months, with allocations to be determined by Africa's Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Some 35 million doses will be delivered by the end of this year, said UNICEF. The agreement with the manufacturer of J&J comes as the continent faces its steepest surge in COVID-19 cases so far. A new study released by the UN Office of Drugs and Crime, UNODC, shows the devastating impact of COVID-19 on victims and survivors of human trafficking and highlights the increased targeting and exploitation of children during the pandemic. Traffickers took advantage of the global crisis, capitalizing on people's loss of income and the increased amount of time both adults and children were spending online. Measures to curb the spread of the virus also increased the risk of trafficking for people in vulnerable situations, exposed victims to further exploitation, and limited access to essential services for survivors. The study further assesses how frontline organizations responded to the challenges posed and continue to deliver essential services despite national and international lockdowns. Laura Quiñones, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and that, of course, is the famous John Lennon, Imagine. It's something that we don't pay attention to because we start the show every week with it, but it's got such lovely words.
No hell below us, above us only sky. I'm Dan Barker. I'm co-host with Annie Laurie Gaylor. This is Free Thought Radio for July the 8th, 2021. I know some of you are listening to it after this date, a few days later, but July the 8th. Our engineer today is Grant Blaschka. He's producing the show in the Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio in Free Thought Hall. Free Thought Hall is the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
And Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We've been going since 2006 as a radio show, and FFRF itself went national in 1978. The Freedom From Religion Foundation works to educate the public about the views of those of us who are personally free from religion and to keep the government, the U.S. government, free from religion as our godless and entirely secular constitution requires. And if you're a member, thank you. And if not, we would love to have you join us today at FFRF.org or ask for information. And we'll be glad to send you a copy of our newspaper, Free Thought Today, and a brochure about our 40-plus years of very active campaigning for the separation of religion and government.
So, Annie Laurie, you were born free and raised free from religion, and some of us were not. Some of us had to escape religion. And today we're going to talk about Muslims who lose their faith. Muhammad Syed of Ex-Muslims of America, of North America, will be joining us in the second half of today's show to talk about what his group is doing to help those who are escaping Islamic beliefs.
And Muhammad will also tell us his own story of deconversion from belief to free thought.
The piano music between segments today is by jazz pianist Addison Fry, whom we've had on this show before. Addison's family are members of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Yesterday on FFRS Ask an Atheist TV show on Facebook Live, Annie Laurie, you and FFRF's Director of Governmental Affairs, Mark Dan, hosted a show about non-believers gaining power in state legislatures. You and Mark spoke with Senator Kelda Royce of Wisconsin and also with Ron Millar, the PAC manager of the Center for Freethought Equality, about how atheists, agnostics, and secular humanists are gaining ground in legislatures across the country, and how we are pushing back against the Christian nationalist legislative agenda.
Yes, Senator Royce was our first in-studio guest since the pandemic started, and she was the perfect guest. Hmm. She was wonderful. During the show, after Mark and Ron reported that many candidates are successfully overcoming the prejudices against non-believers running for public office, I asked Kelda about her views on religion. Yeah, so we have one of these success stories in the studio with us, Senator Kelda Royce. And Kelda, how do you identify in terms of religion?
Well, I have been a secular humanist and an atheist since, I think, my teen years. I was raised Unitarian Universalist, and one of the wonderful things about being raised in that tradition is that you really have the opportunity to learn about all the world's religions and become literate in different religious traditions. I was also raised by celebrating a lot of the Jewish holidays and sort of in that culture with my dad. So I feel very lucky that I had that opportunity as a young person to really explore my own beliefs. All young people would benefit from having the ability to do that.
Yeah, being able to grow up and make up your own mind once you're mm-hmm. old enough to understand all of this.
And to really learn and be exposed to the fact that, you know, there's just a tremendous diversity of thought when it comes to religion and spirituality and, you know, things like tradition and culture. I do think that having some increased visibility for free thinkers and for other religious minorities, you know, in the same way that we've become more culturally attuned to the fact that not everyone is Christian, I think that's a good thing. It's a good thing for all Americans so that we can all feel welcomed and like we have a stake in our government and our government isn't trying to impose one particular religious belief on our whole society. I mean, that is the basis for this country. And so we definitely have more work to do in terms of making sure that government reflects the freedom of religion that is our birthright as Americans.
Such a refreshing politician. Huh. It was so refreshing to hear a public official be forthright on her dissent from religion. You can watch and participate in that Ask an Atheist live program on most Wednesdays. Once in a while, we do a rerun at noon Central Time, and just go to Facebook to get that, and you can ask questions during the broadcast, and you can watch yesterday's show. It's worth watching. In more than 160 previous shows on FFRF's YouTube channel, you can search for the Ask an Atheist playlist. You can also sign up to get that sent to you.
So you were reading a story this morning in the Wisconsin State Journal.
Right. There's a story in the Wisconsin State Journal. The headline is Johnson, Climate Change Just Myth. This is U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, who presents quite a contrast to State Senator Kelder Royce, and he was talking to a group of women, I believe, at the Wisconsin luncheon.
Republican women.
Women, and what he said has to be bleeped. So why don't we listen to that, what he said first?
I don't know about you guys, but I think climate change is, as Lord Monckton said, and by the way, it is.
So he went on to say, what are we doing here? Well, we're killing ourselves. It's a self-inflicted wound. So, you know, bizarre.
The climate change
given
is just a myth.
The climate change that's going to do us in. And this is part of his longtime anti-science views. He is very famous for talking about his dubious theories and the questionable treatments on COVID pushed by President Trump and going after vaccines. And saying things like, what difference does it make if your neighbor's vaccinated or not? No understanding of herd mentality rather than understanding herd immunity. And no sense of patriotism, as you would expect from a public official, that we all roll up our sleeves and do our duty so we don't make somebody else sick, even if we don't care about ourselves. So, but he has his history of voicing dissent, voicing contrarian views on science goes way, way back. You know, he's sort of in a class by himself.
So last week on our July 4th show, we told you about an ad that we ran in the newspaper, which was countering the ubiquitous Hobby Lobby ad that ran all over the country with these false quotes from our founding fathers claiming that America is a Christian nation. And boy, our ad generated a lot of press.
Yeah, well, the press release we sent out about it did. We ran this ad just in the Wisconsin State Journal and in a weekly in Peoria this year, but we've done it as we can afford to around the country, you know, maybe taking 25 major newspapers. I'd like to do it again, but Hobby Lobby has about 350 of these ads running on July 4th full of bogus quotes, supposedly showing that we're one nation under God and are a Christian nation. And when we first ran these ads, we did a very cool interactive page that shows the Hobby Lobby quote, and then you click on it, and then we give the context and debunk things and explain things. And so this generated huge amount of publicity. Newsweek headline was Hobby Lobby faces backlash over newspaper ad calling for Christian-run government. Washington News Today, Hobby Lobby, same kind of headline. Barcelona.
Spain.
You want to read that headline, Dan?
El lobby de hobby se enfrenta a una reacción violenta por un anuncio en el periódico que pide un gobierno dirigido por cristianos. Basically, it's saying the same thing you said there.
Christian Post did a story quoting us in our ad. Did Hobby Lobby really go full dominionism? Franklin Graham got involved, complaining that we were the enemies of Christianity. Anybody that was attacking that ad or questioning the validity of that Hobby Lobby ad
That's
is
Billy
enemies
Graham.
Of Christianity.
Billy Graham's son.
So, of course, we're very proud to be called that by him. In other news that is very concerning, we issued a press release, Wake Up, Supreme Court's ultra-right majority is threatening basic rights. And this is about their upholding of two Arizona voting laws that contribute to the disenfranchisement of voters of color and further eviscerating the Voting Rights Act, which the Supreme Court in 2013 had really done a whammy on Section 5, which was so important. Now it's eviscerating Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. And I'm sure you all read the news, but we do consider this a secular issue because you cannot have a democratic republic without access to the ballot. And as Ben Franklin famously posed, the United States does have a republic if we can keep it. So we're watching that with great trepidation. And speaking of the Supreme Court and some dubious actions, we learned last Friday that the Supreme Court is accepting a case regarding school funding of parochial schools out of Maine. So, of course, it's always bad when they take a case where they are basically, it's going our way, and then they take the case. It's a case where Maine has an existing school funding program, and it allows private schools to receive taxpayer money in rural communities that lack the equivalent public schools due to their low student population. And the law properly limits funding to schools providing students with an education free of religious indoctrination. This law does not say if you're a religious school, you can't apply. It looks at the actual teaching in the school and how it is applied. And so the first U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals last fall correctly upheld this program. So very concerning that the Supreme Court is now once again taking what's basically a school voucher issue.
And we wrote an amicus brief in that
case.
We
wrote an
amicus
brief in that first, yes, for this, and we will be writing an amicus brief now before the U.S. Supreme Court. But all we can say is watch out.
So we have a couple of victories to announce this week. Our attorneys have been very busy making complaints on behalf of members and writing letters of complaint. In Colorado, a school district has agreed to stop Bible distribution and religious distribution to students during school hours. It's the Brush Creek Elementary School, and Redeemer Eagle Valley Christian Church was bringing in literature. So somebody complained, we wrote a letter, and we got a refreshing reply from the school. The school responded in a respectful manner saying, I'm grateful to know that organizations like FFRF exist and can advocate on behalf of those who feel the separation of church and state is at risk. So that was kind of refreshing to actually get a positive.
Very, very nice, and that the superintendent probably was not aware of the situation. So
they've stopped the distribution. Over in Pennsylvania, we stopped a religious Bible verse on the Pennsylvania jury oath. At the bottom of it, they had quoted on the oath for being on the jury, Romans 13:1, let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there's no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. That's on a secular jury summons. And by the way, that's the same verse that Jeff Sessions used. Remember with the border,
right,
caging children and
yes,
all that? We should follow what the Bible says. So the jury office was impressed by our letter and wrote, upon receiving your letter, the Bible verse was immediately removed from all jury summons. With respect to the government-mandated separation of church and state, no future summons will include the verse.
Yes.
So isn't that?
And those, I think those are Chris Lyne's victories.
Yeah.
Well done.
The letter she sent out. And then we're making a complaint. There has been no resolution here, but in the city of Crestline, California.
Which is your old stomping ground, Dan.
Well, not technically. Yeah, I've been there a lot. In fact, I used to wash dishes at some of the Christian camps up there. But two of my daughters have lived in Crestline, and one still does. It's up in the mountains, right? And there's a lake there called...
The San Bernardino Mountains.
Yep, in California. Lake Gregory, which is beautiful. And I stayed there.
It's a reservoir, I understand.
It's a big one, yeah, man. Human-made. Maybe it's a woman-made. Human-made lake. Lake Gregory, which is beautiful, and we walked all around the lake, and it's gorgeous. Well, they have a community center there called San Moritz Lodge, and a concerned resident informed us that the Lake Gregory Regional Park, which maintains in that facility, has allowed this Woodlands Church to get a favorable rate to rent that every Sunday, including reduced parking. And the church is not considering it their permanent home. So we are complaining about this coziness between the city and between this local church, allowing them to take over on Sundays. And when I texted my daughter about this, she says, well, I know all about it. It's a big story. It's a big buzz. Besides that, and we didn't know this, she said on Sunday mornings they're broadcasting the service over the loudspeakers. So people who walk around the lake on Sundays are hearing religious...
You can't get away from it on Sunday morning when you go into nature. Well, here's another thing you didn't know that I learned from the complaining attorney, Chris Lyne, and that is that the corporation that the county contracts with to run the park is Christian-based.
Ah.
So there's more going on there.
So there are a lot of coziness. So.
After the break, we are going to hear a song based on the words of the poet Sherry Metulis about why she was proud to be an atheist.
And then after that, in the second half of the show, we're going to talk with Muhammad Syed of Ex-Muslims of North America about the serious challenges that many people face when they decide to leave Islam. Be a fascinating interview. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is Addison Fry playing Mona Lisa. We'll be right back.
This is Janine Garofalo. Are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. Tomorrow would have been the 90th birthday of Sherry Matulis. She was a longtime member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. She was born July the 9th, 1931.
Sherry Matulis was an activist for women's rights, as well as an atheist. She was a poet, author, and a good friend. At age 20, she was surprised to find herself in the first Miss Universe contest, selected by photographs secretly submitted by her husband, and she wrote an amusing essay about that for my former newspaper, The Feminist Connection. As the village atheist in Peoria, Illinois, Sherry ran a small businesses for many years. She also had five children. She became a national spokesperson for abortion rights in the 1980s. She sent me a letter, Dan, about these experiences, and we published them, and then the Progressive picked it up, and then she became nationally known in the abortion movement. It was a letter about her life-threatening experiences in seeking an illegal abortion following a brutal rape in Peoria in 1954. I have never read a more compelling letter. I can still remember opening it and reading this experience. The man was a religious fanatic who carved a cross on her abdomen. She was lucky to survive, and then she had to seek a back alley abortion. She was invited to speak about her experiences before a U.S. Senate subcommittee chaired by Orrin Hatch in 1981. She also testified before several state legislatures. She was excellent spokesperson for abortion rights.
And Sherry Matulis appeared on many radio and national TV programs. She was published in Red Book, Isaac Asimov Science Fiction Magazine, Questar, Analog, Free Thought Today, and The Rationalist. She died in 2014.
And we reprinted one of her poems in the first anthology of Women Freethinkers, currently the only anthology of Women Freethinkers, Women Without Superstition, that I edited. It's available from ffrf.org shop. And this is called Religion's Child. I'm going to read it. Religion's child, aware of light and yet condemned to grope through dark regression's cave, told she must find life's purpose in that blackness without hope, denied the luminescence of her mind until, at last, she finds the darkness kind. Religion's child, a babe once bright and fair, curls up, tucks in her tail, and says her prayer.
That's so sad, isn't it?
Yeah. Another poem by Sherry Matulis expresses her pride at being an atheist. And Dan, you set the poem to music, and it's called Benediction.
Pride goeth, so the Christians say, before a mighty fall. But me, I've never felt that way. I never stand so tall as when I say I'm proud to be an atheist. Oh yes, it helps me stand for so much more. And fall for so much less.
Being an atheist helps me stand for so much more and fall for so much less. And that makes me think about Senator Ron Johnson, who seems to fall for everything.
Yeah, well, he stands for some little tiny narrow ideas, such as faith. So that was Sherry Matulis, and that song is available on FFRF's Friendly Neighborhood Atheist CD, including dozens of other songs written by historical and contemporary freethinkers. Oh, stay tuned. We're going to be right back. We're taking a break. We're going to come back in the second half of the show and speak with Muhammad Sayed. He's a president. He is one of the co-founders and the president of Ex-Muslims of North America, to talk about the many challenges faced by those who decide to leave Islam. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at FFRF.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And I used to be a preacher, some of you know. When I was a Christian preacher, I used to think I could talk with Jesus. Well, today, we're going to talk with Muhammad. Muhammad Sayed is the president of Ex-Muslims of North America, EXMNA. He's a Pakistani-American speaker. He's a writer. He's an activist. He created EXMNA in 2013. He co-founded it. It's a group that seeks to normalize religious dissent and to help former Muslims leave Islam.
Muhammad Sayed was born in the United States, but he grew up in Pakistan. And we're talking to Muhammad from the D.C. area. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure.
So tell us about your upbringing. You were born in the U.S. but raised in Pakistan in a Muslim family, in the Muslim religion, which you eventually left. So what was that like?
Lack of friends. A reference to compare it to others, but Pakistan is a conservative country, and even I was in the most liberal city, Karachi, and even there, what you would take for granted, separation of church and state, the fact that religion isn't a part of schooling, social attitudes, all of that was completely different. To give one example, in our school, we had prayers In Islam, you're supposed to pray five times a day. Two of those prayers landed during school hours. So we actually had group prayers, and I actually led some of them. Huh. And we had religious holidays in the sense of today's a religious event, so you should be praying all day or all night, depending upon what it we're speaking about. So you have off, so you can actually pray.
So did you actually think you were talking to a deity? When you prayed, were you sincere, or was it just like a ritual or something?
No, it was definitely not a ritual. You believe that it was the truth because there are no dissenting voices around you. So think of like you're in the Middle Ages that everybody believes in it. You don't encounter doubt. So there's no reason to presume that what you're being told isn't fact. In Pakistan, for example, speaking negatively about Islam is punishable by death. So obviously there's no way you ever encounter that. Even dissenting voices that are Muslim are silenced.
Wow.
So what happened? How did you start questioning your faith?
You read too much, huh?
So generally, the biggest factor would be Carl Sagan. So I read a lot of his work. The Demon Haunted World in particular was very influential. I read Cosmos. And the point, that didn't make me actually, neither of those shook my faith. It was more that they gave me the tools to think critically. So when the time came when I was examining my faith many years down the road, I was able to look at it openly and play devil's advocate in my own mind. And that period where I was actually fervently examining my faith lasted about a year. And at the end of that, it was very clear to me that I was lying to myself about what this actually was.
So I heard you speak once somewhere where you said that your family actually embraced science. You weren't extremist like creationist Muslims. You actually had some respect for science. Is that true?
Yes. So my parents were in America. My dad did his PhD over here. My mom did hers in England. They're well-educated people, and we were raised in a scientific environment. So the idea that there's conflict between religion and faith did not exist in my periphery growing up. So I had presumed that whatever is within science maps onto what is in religion, because religion is obviously true. So the conflict that exists over here in the public debate doesn't really surface over there, again, because there's no dissenting voices. So while we're taught, so in my ninth grade biology class, for example, there was a one-pager about evolution. And on that one-pager, it started off with, this is what the Quran says, and Adam and Eve, and then there was a paragraph about what evolution is means and how the West or certain scientists view it, but we know that's not true.
Yeah, that's kind of like what I saw at the Creationism Museum. They gave both sides, but we know what side is true, the creationist side.
So when did
even, like in a high school textbook, the total treatment of evolution was one page, half of which was religion.
Wow, there you go. Well, that's balanced. That's fair and balanced, huh?
So when did you really leave Islam? I mean, how old were you? And were you in the United States at that point or still in Pakistan?
Yeah, I was in the United States. I had moved to the United States and did grad school over here. After grad school, one of my past fellows that I've known since childhood, he was also here in grad school. He moved back to Pakistan, became hyper-conservative, moved into a religious school, was living there. And his transition from a moderate, middle-of-the-road person to a fundamentalist freaked me out a bit. And that's when I spent a year trying to understand Islam better. I was coming at it from the perspective that somebody that was my peer, intellectually and personally, was going down this dark path, and I need to understand Islam better to be able to pull him back out and prevent this from happening to other people that I love. So when I started examining that, it was very clear that his outlook on what Islam is, 7th century mythology that reflects all the vagaries and ethical flaws of the 7th century was accurate.
Yeah, that's right. And yeah, you hear a lot of Muslims try to say, well, Islam is just more gentle, more liberal. But when you actually read it like you did, you find out the truth of the dangers of that faith, don't you?
Yeah, so it's nothing extraordinary except that it's of the 7th century. If you go to any part of the world in the 7th century and look up their social attitudes, in any context, they'll be terrible. And then to deify those and make those active forever. And not only that, Muhammad is revered as the best person ever whose example must be followed. Do that to any 7th century person, you're going to get really, really bad results.
Huh. Well, there you go. So did you have any pushback? Did you have any reaction from family and friends after you announced that you had left the faith?
Oh, yeah, quite a bit. But again, going back to the fact that my family was relatively liberal, it wasn't as bad as a lot of people get it. So we had, my experience in that context was probably closer to conservative Christians, like evangelical Christians or Mormons maybe, that my family was angry with me. We had a lot of conversations over multiple years. I had a lot of friends that cut off contact, people that I'd known since middle school, grade school. But ultimately, there was no threat of violence. There was no, I knew that my immediate family at least loved me regardless. That's why I sort of was more open about these things. And so my experience, I would say, is not typical of the average ex-Muslim because most of them don't come out. I came out immediately, and as a result, I had a lot of ex-Muslims approach me that were in the closet and said, "But yeah, I agree with you entirely. I can't say it for a variety of reasons." And that's sort of what led to actually forming ex-Muslims in North America, that I realized that I was very privileged compared to the average, and a lot of people are suffering, and whichever ones of us can actually speak up without too much of a pushback, it's somewhat of an ethical obligation to do so.
Yeah, that's that's a very important reason for founding a group. I feel the same way kind of about founding FFRF. If you can speak up, you should.
Hmm. I saw you have some T-shirts on your website. You're wearing one that says, "I'm an ex-Muslim, ask me why." And someone else is wearing one of your T-shirts that says, "Awesome without Allah." Are those T-shirts effective?
Yes, actually. In the sense that the average Muslim never encounters doubt, even in America. Like, our society right now is so fractured and so polarized that we don't want to talk about difficult conversations don't happen. So you don't see in your face atheism in an Islamic context in a way in which you see it in Christianity. Christianity is mocked regularly all over the place, comedians and TV, with Islam, even saying, "Hey, I'm awesome without Allah," is something that people never, ever encounter. We did a billboard campaign last year, actually 2019, and in that we wanted to put "awesome without Allah," and every single billboard company refused entirely. We had to put a much more mild campaign about the fact that we exist.
We have encountered a lot of that, too, where we can't say something the way we want to by billboard companies. But "Awesome Without Allah" is a great campaign.
That is good. Alliterative.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've worked with ex-Muslims of North America on some issues. For example, in 2016, FFRF attorney Andrew Seidel wrote a letter on your behalf to Wegmans Food Market. Do you want to talk about what happened there?
Yeah, all of this is insane that it happens, but thank you guys very much for your intervention there. So that was our third year operation, so we were having an anniversary party, and we ordered a cake from Wegmans, which simply said the name of our organization and "Happy third anniversary." That's all. There was nothing, no other message, and that was offensive enough to Wegmans that they refused a service.
So, which of course is a violation of the Civil Rights Act. And how did that? You're going to have to remind me how that got resolved. Were we successful?
So FFRF sent them a letter about the issue, and it was escalated up the chain. And we also were talking about it on social media. So very rapidly, it reached the level of the CEO, who asked the local store to reverse. They apologized, I think, within a week.
Yay, a success story. Better than what happened with Hobby Lobby.
Well, let them eat cake, so.
Yes. And then Facebook at one point shut you down, didn't they?
Yes, sort of the same thing. Speaking up about Islam is not allowed. Not just us, but a lot of different groups were shut down. It's a combination of speaking about the problems within Islam as hate and the fact that Muslims are very motivated to report it as hate. So there's been large organized efforts that atheists from our context, Arab atheists, Pakistani atheists, have encountered where thousands and thousands of Muslims get together on social media groups or social media pages and report atheist pages and individuals for hate. And if 1,000 reports come in about, say, ex-Muslim in North America being hateful or a specific post being hateful, Facebook shuts things down. The review process is quite a bit flawed.
Yeah. And so it took a while, but you got yourself back up on Facebook.
Yes, but it's still an ongoing process. So we've been in contact with Facebook over the past 2 years. Congressman Huffman from the Free Talk Caucus was instrumental in making that happen. We've had a few meetings. Initially, they were resistant to the fact that there are any problems, but they do recognize now that there are some issues, and we're in talks with them about improving the review process. And maybe, hopefully, recognize the fact that atheists are persecuted around the world.
It's not a hate crime to be an atheist. That's basically what they're trying to say. If you criticize religion, that's a hate crime.
But maybe it's because the algorithms they use identify a bunch of those words, and so they automatically think it's a hate group. So,
well, when we come back, we'll talk more about that, and we'll talk more about what ex-Muslims of North America does, including something called Unbelief Brief. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio. We're talking with Muhammad Sayed, who is a co-founder of Ex-Muslims of North America.
I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom From Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylord.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker, and we're continuing our talk with Muhammad Sayed. He's a co-founder and president of Ex-Muslims of North America, and the other co-founder, Sarah Hayter. We've spoken with her on this show before, and I think this is the first time we've talked with you, Muhammad. So on your webpage, Ex-Muslims of North America, tell us how we can find that, and then tell us what is this, what is it called, the Apostate Report? Yeah.
So the website is exmuslims.org, exmuslims.org. And we conducted a survey of ex-Muslims. There's very little data available, quantitative data about attitudes among ex-Muslims, why they left, what sort of pushback they received. And due to our positioning, there's a lot of effort to demonize us or use us for others' political narratives. So we wanted to actually collect actual data, speak to actual ex-Muslims. We hired George Mason University to conduct the survey, and it's the first of its kind of a large-scale survey of ex-Muslims. And we released a report based on it called the Apostate Report. Today, actually, the Washington Post covered it as well.
Really? Just today. Yes. Have to look it up.
Yes. So some of the findings are something that would be intuitive to people that are in the atheist sphere. For example, over 90% of them were left-leaning. About 5% were right-leaning. And most of the reasons that people leave the faith are related to science, related to human rights. If you talk to Muslims, it's usually they try to spin it because obviously they can't admit that there's flaws in their theology. That it has to do with hedonism, that has to do with worldly desires, that has to do with a misunderstanding of Islam. But the data that we have belies that as well. For most people that left the faith, it was a long and arduous process. It took many, many years for most people. I think 63% of those that responded to the survey took multiple years to leave. Only about, I think, 7% left within weeks of having doubts.
How many people did you survey?
Over 550.
Over 550 people? Were they all in North America or were they around the world?
All in North America. So U.S. and Canada.
Well, that tells you something, that you could find that many ex-Muslims to even talk to. I mean, that's quite an accomplishment. So you have a thing, you published that in a, what is Unbelief Brief? Is that like a periodical?
Yeah, so it's a bi-monthly newsletter that we started sending out, which covers what's going on around the world in our context, in related to blasphemy, related to apostasy. There's generally events happening all the time that aren't covered often enough or aren't amplified, and we wanted to shine a spotlight on them. So, for example, I think 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, Imran Khan, the Pakistani prime minister, started making a big push about internationalizing blasphemy laws. As I was mentioning, blasphemy carries a death penalty in Pakistan, and they're trying to get all the Muslim countries to work as a lobby and push the UN to try to criminalize blasphemy internationally. That did not achieve much mainstream coverage over here, but it's something that we need to push back against. Similarly, in the UAE recently, there was arrests of freethinkers. UAE is generally, Dubai, for example, is regarded as somewhat of a more liberal state, but that isn't the case. Even ex-Muslims that are the people that were arrested were Sri Lankan. They were there for work, and on their spare time, they were activists. So we want to make sure that all of these events that are happening around the world are in the public eye.
I noticed that a Christian couple they were on death row for 7 years in Pakistan, and they finally got released. They were being held on blasphemy in Pakistan.
Yeah.
So it's not just
another case that
non-believers, right?
Yeah, it's everybody. Anybody that differs from the mainstream theology. Minority groups are routinely targeted.
Pakistan used to use Ireland as an excuse because Ireland used to have a blasphemy law. Ireland just repealed it. So it's time for Pakistan to do the same thing.
And
yes.
Ex-Muslims of North America has also put together a whole website on cases prosecution of apostasy, persecution of non-believers. Have you not?
Yes. So again, it goes back to the same thing, that a lot of these cases aren't covered well and aren't kept in the public eye. So we've started documenting them. We have researchers that work on it. And the website is persecution.exmuslims.org. And we catalog cases from around the world where people have had to go into hiding, have been arrested, have been harassed, have been killed outright. And if you look at them, we have a map on there. If you look at the map, it happens everywhere. Salman Rushdie, when a Satanic Verses book came out, translators were killed in Japan, for example. You wouldn't think that blasphemy would be an issue in Japan, but when the religious are inflamed, it tends to go far beyond what you would presume. One of the cases in Pakistan that happened this week, somebody was arrested for blasphemy charges. They got out. The charges were dismissed, and a cop actually killed them.
That's tragic.
Doing God's work.
Yeah, so once they've been identified that way, they're a target, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, so, and of course there was the famous case of Azia Bibi, if I'm saying it correctly, and she finally got released, and I guess she's in Canada, a Christian, illiterate woman accused of defaming Allah. So, yes, the world needs to condemn what's going on in Pakistan.
So how do you screen people? I mean, there must be people trying to crash your webpage. You must have a pretty careful screening project for people who join.
Yes, we're very careful about the people. We have extensive interviews with anybody that's working with us. Even we run support groups. Regarding the support groups, we have screening processes to make sure that people that are applying to be a part of support groups are legitimately ex-Muslims. And again, that's the benefit of being in the U.S., that we can do that. We can get enough volunteers. In most Muslim countries, people tend to be undercover entirely. They're not able to meet up in person. They're not able to
form the normal human social bonds that we all take for granted.
Well, I know that there was going to be the first open meeting of ex-Muslims of North America that FFRF was going to help sponsor. It had to be postponed due to the pandemic, and now my understanding is that's going to happen next year, correct?
We're planning on it tentatively for next year.
Yeah.
We had to postpone it last year, and then this year we were hoping that we'd be further along in the vaccine internationally, but we aren't. So we're going to be looking for next fall.
Well, that'll be a great thing, and we'll look forward to it.
Well, thank you, Muhammad. Great interview. Muhammad Syed is the co-founder and president of Ex-Muslims of North America. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
We also want to thank Grant Blaschka for engineering the show, and we want to thank listeners in Philadelphia to WOOM, to WIDE, WMUU in Madison, Wisconsin, to WADR in Janesville, to KEOS in Bryan, Texas, KOPN in Columbia, Missouri, KEPW in Eugene, Oregon, KZSM in San Marcos, Texas, WOOL in Bellows Falls, Vermont, and WRFI in Ithaca in Watkins Glen, New York. And if you're one of the many thousands of podcast listeners, please give us a thumbs up and tell your friends to find out more about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
And tell your friends to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And you can check us out at our website at ffrf.org. Click on the link to ask for more information, and we'll gladly send you complimentary information about everything we do, the litigation, the outreach, not just the radio show. We invite you to tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday